You're listening to Amav Hazar with Daniel Eisberg, Maseches Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. We're going to start at the bottom of Kuf Chaf Beis Amud Beis. And we just, we really made it to the next Amud, but just to father this last point. So we spoke about, we quoted the Mishnah, which says that if you could take a hammer and use it to break open nuts. And Rav Yehuda said that this is talking about a hammer that was designated as a nutcracker. However, you are not allowed to take a blacksmith's hammer, which is not designated for nuts, and use that because that is a kli shel malach tola isur. It's a kli that's primary purpose is for malacha, and therefore it is usur even l'tzarech gufo, meaning even to use it for its own mutter purpose, a secondary mutter purpose, that is still forbidden. And Rabba disagrees. Rabba says no. You know, clearly, based on some of the other examples in the Mishnah, clearly, you know, some of these things are not, like, you don't have a winnowing shovel or a pitchfork designated for the purpose of feeding a child, and therefore we should not assume that they're talking about specifically designated objects for the secondary purpose. Rather, we mean stam. A blacksmith's hammer can be used as another. Remember, it's part of the corn on the cob, the kochab point where, right, he's sitting in the dark eating his corn on the cob, the lights are turned on, and he opens the trunk, detaches the door, and takes out a blacksmith's hammer to open the nut. So that's that last point. They're allowed to use a blacksmith's hammer to open nuts. And there, because he holds klish malach tol iser is mutter l'tzarech gufo. So now we take it to the top of kuf chav gimel amud aleph. We are the siman for this work is like it's kuf chav gimel is kaching. It's like a cash register going kaching kaching. Kuf Chav Gimel, Kaching. So so in Kuf Chav Gimel, we had take it from the top. So now there's going to be a couple of challenges from Abaye, from various brisos, challenging the shita of Rabba, that a kli shel malach tola iser is actually mutter l'tzarech gufo. So Abaye says not so fast. We have a brisa over here. Eisvei Abaye la Rabba. Meducha. So you have a mortar. For which you're, you know, typically shadochen bashum, Rashi says, you grind garlic in it. So im yesh bashum metatel nasa, vim lav in metatel nasa. If there is currently garlic in the mortar, then you are allowed to move it, the mortar. Otherwise, you're not allowed to move the mortar. Rashi explains, im yesh bashum metatel nasa, agav hashum, because the garlic is there. Vim lav in metatel nasa, kigon leishiv aleha, meaning, let's say you want to sit on it, right? I'm not using it for its purpose that'd be a total of tochein to make the shum, to grind the shum, and be a total tochein. So that's the primary purpose. But let's say your secondary purpose, you want to sit on it. Kevon de ikra malachto l'shchika, since its primary malach is for shchika, which is a total of tochein, grinding, de malachas isr mishum tochein. So therefore, you are not allowed to take it. So, we see over here, it's a klisha malachto l'isr. Primary purpose is for shchika, for tochein. Yet its secondary purpose could be for yeshiva, which is obviously mutter. And you're not allowed to use it with tzarech gufo, you're not allowed to move it, unless there's garlic already in it, because then perhaps, well, it's a discussion of what exactly the purpose it's serving there and why you'd be allowed to do it. Is it because it becomes like subordinate to the kli, or is it maybe being used as a kli and maybe a primary purpose of, maybe it's considered a primary purpose of a mortar to be an encasing for garlic, which is certainly a mutter purpose, and maybe that's fine. But over here says Abaye to Rabba, see kli shemalach tol iser is oster even l'tzarech gufo. Rabba responds, Omar Lay, he says to him, Ho Mani, who is this? Who is the Tana of this? Rabbi Nechemia, this is actually the Shita Rabbi Nechemia. Damar Ein Kli Nitel El Tzarech Tashmisha. That he says that a Kli can only be taken for the purpose of its own primary use. We've seen this before. We've seen this opinion of Rabbi Nechemia before, a long time ago, on Daf Lamed Vav. If you remember, we had a discussion of the Chatzotros and the Shofros. Right? This is from a while ago. We got into the discussion because we were talking on Lamed Hey about the six shofar blasts Erev Shabbos, the six tehillos Erev Shabbos, and then where does he put the shofar, right? Is there a little bit of time for the person who blows the shofar to put it, to bring it back to his house? And we had that whole discussion. Then we got into discussion. Wait, is a shofar muktzah? Is our trumpets muktzah? Well, shofaros, can they be used for something else? Can you give a baby to drink out of the shofar? And that, there was a whole discussion over there. And we quoted three opinions. I think it was Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Nechemia. And Rabbi Nechemia was this very strict opinion that everything is muktzah except for the specific primary purpose it's used for, and that's a das yachid, and that's a very very strict opinion, even more strict than Rabbi Yehuda, and that's the Rabbi Nechemia you're quoting over here. So he says, "Ein kli nita al tzarek tashmisho." Nevertheless, in general, we hold kli shemalach to l'isser. As long as you're not Rabbi Nechemia, kli shemalach to l'isser is mutter l'tzarek gufo. Esve, so Abaye challenges him yet again. Be shami omrim in notlenesa eli laketzeva love basar ubesila matirin. So this is machlokas be shami be sila. This is from, where is this from? I'm not sure where this is being quoted from. Okay, but it's a brisa somewhere that if you have the eli, which is the pestle of the mortar, right, the thing that you use to mix. To grind in the mortar, so you're allowed to use it. So Beis Hillel says you're allowed to use it for cutting meat on it. Beis Shammai says you're not allowed to do that, and Beis Hillel says say you are allowed to do it. You're allowed to use it for that. Vishavin, and they agree. Shem Ketzav Alav Basar Sha'aser L'Taltzlo. That if you've already cut the meat on it, you're not allowed to move it further. Rashi explains. If you already did it, you did it for Simchas Yom Tov, and we allowed, Beis Hillel allowed you to do that. Because the fact that the reason Beis Hillel permitted it, right? You see where we're in Rashi? Mishum Simchas Yom Tov Kesharu. They permitted it because Simchas Yom Tov. Alma Mishum De Eli Malakto LeIsser LeChesishas Targis VeTisni VeKlipas Eitzim LeAvid Bahen Oros Aser. Right, but for any other purpose, it's Aser. So there's a special heter that they put in play for that basically put in play for the purpose of Simchas Yom Tov. That you're allowed to cut meat on it, but in general, they forbid it, and therefore even so, there are other things. So Klipas Shalakto LeIsser. That would in general be usher letzarech gufo. That's what's derived from here. So what did Rabbah respond to this? So savar l'shinuyei like Rabbi Nechemia. His havamina was to say, oh, this is also the sheet of Rabbi Nechemia. That, you know, I guess I think that's Rabbi Nechemia. This version of Beis Shammai Beis Hillel or whatever it is, but came unto Shamala. But basically, a teaching came to the attention of Rabbah that he felt like, oh, this is a better answer than just aligning that with the sheet of Rabbi Nechemia. I have actually a better answer based on this following teaching. But came unto Shamala ha da Amar of Chinana Bar Shalamia Mishmei de Rav. Once he heard this teaching, that Hakol Modim Besichi Zairi Umzori, that everybody admits regarding Sichi, Zairi, and Mizori, these three items, the cave and the kapit alayhu, miachid lahu, makom. So he heard that everybody agrees, even the most lenient opinion agrees, that these three items. So Rashi has two interpretations of this. Rashi says what these three things are. He says, klit, savoy, and hain. Rashi says these are kalim of dyers. Right? They die. He doesn't explain what they are. And then he says, Rabbeinu Halevi perish clay organ. That they're weaving kalim. There are three different kalim that are used to dye things, dye clothing, or three different things that are for weaving. Sichi heina mudin. There's some sort of pillars. Ziri are kanim, some reeds. Shebeshesi of the shesi, and umazore is koveda elyon, like this heavy beam that's on top. V'tachton, I guess on the bottom as well. V'risha nearly. He says I like the first shot better. Tosas over here quotes the aruch. Aruch is like a early, like I guess late Gaonic or early Rishonic, like dictionary, and it says Peter Sichi Hem Yesedo Samuchanin Lenafetz Bahen, that it's that they're like pegs that are prepared for combing fibers, I guess some sort of spindle. Pan Mashi Kiotseba Targum Yesedos and Sichi, and that Sichi and Zairi is a Kli Eitz Kemo Krushim Shakovshin Bahen Begadim, some sort of clothes press, some wood that. I guess folds clothing, and he has the last one as well. And what is the last one? Mizorius cleats Kovitz Makabo Begadim ala Evan Shimilabno, right? And this cleats is some sort of like mallet for I guess softening or laundering garments. So that's what it is. So whether it's some so there's three interpretations of here in Rashi and Tosos of what these type of things are. But anyway, they're things that are specifically designated for certain purposes, and they might become ruined if they're used for any purpose other than their own, right? And that's back to the Gemara. So now we have a concept of these things. B'sichi zayim zori to kaven to copy the lahu. Since the person is the whether the dyer or the weaver or the launderer, they're makbid on these things. Rashi says ha'uman shelo yislach lechu v'shelo yisamku akmu, that they don't want them to, I guess, get dirty and get like twisted. Miachid lahem miluhu makom. He designates a certain place for them. But doesn't want people to touch them and use them for other purposes. Now, this is, are you familiar with this this category of mukta? Yeah, right. So this is mukta machmas chisaron kis. That there are certain objects that because the owner is makbid to use them only for certain things. And mukta machmas chisaron kis doesn't necessarily have to be so expensive, but since someone doesn't want is makbid enough that they don't want to use them for this type of purpose, then it has a mukta status. So says Rabba, once he heard this teaching, this concept, mukta machmas chisaron kis, that's great. He says hachanami miyachid lu makom. Over here also, it's miyachid the makom. Regarding the pestle that we just mentioned, that's the case. Why? Because the owner doesn't want to use it like that. Rashi, by the way, says eli haninami eli umaducha. Rabba originally interpreted, there are two brisos that Abaye quoted against Rabba. One of them was the case of the meducha, of the mortar, and then the other one was of the eli, the pestle. And the first one he interpreted according to Rabbi Nechemia. And then the second one, he was going to interpret it to Rabbi Nechemia, but I guess in the interim he heard this chiddush. And so Rashi says he actually retracted even the first response and said, you don't have to say Rabbi Nechemia for that. You don't have to go after Rabbi Nechemia. You could say both of these cases, mukta machmas chisaron kis, and that's why we're machmir in these cases, but in general, kli shemalachto le'isser, as long as it's not mukta machmas chisaron kis, kli shemalachto le'isser is mutter l'tzarech gufo. That's what Rabba says. And that's what Rabba concludes. Itmar was stated, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, kurnos shel zahavim, Shaninu. We learned, so he said, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says in the Rabbi Yochanan that when we learned about a hammer in our Mishnah, right, it was unspecified what type of hammer. Rabbi Yehuda said it was a nutcracker designated hammer, and Rabbi says no, even a blacksmith's hammer. Now here's even more of a chiddush. Rabbi Chiya says it's of zahavim, of goldsmith. And that's what we're talking about. And this is a greater chiddush, right? Rashi says, "Afal pi dekapid ale," right? Kornos shel zahavim. Afal pi dekapid ale ktsas shetzarch shehei chalak liradid tasin. A goldsmith is much more machbid about his hammer than a blacksmith because he needs it to cut tasin, fine, thin slates of gold. Filhachi kevan shemasakin al yedei hakah shemakal hasadan, because he's able to hit it on an anvil. It's not mukhs of a koshakin shar napachim karaba. And he certainly agrees with Rabba, meaning he's saying an added chiddush beyond Rabba. Right? Because you might think that, a goldsmith is more closer to mukhs of machmas chisaron kis. Right? He's going to be very makbid because he needs his hammer to be fine so that he can cut thin slates of gold. He doesn't want to pierce the gold by accident. So says Rav Chiya bar Abba, is it? Yeah? Rav Chiya bar Abba, name Rabbi Yochanan. That you can even use a goldsmith hammer, not just a nutcracker hammer like Rav Yehuda, and not just like Rabba, a blacksmith, but even a goldsmith's hammer. I don't know if Rabba would necessarily disagree, but it's an added level. Rav Shimon bar Abba amar kornos shel besamim shaninu. Rav Shimon bar Abba says no, it's a hammer of besamim. Right, because the Rashi says l'shachokbo to grind besamim, they used a hammer for it. Manda amar de besamim kol shekin da zahavim. Manda amar shel zahavim avo besamim kapit alayhu. So the one who says that it's a goldsmith's hammer, then he would say for sure a besamim hammer. Actually, no. Sorry. One who says a besamim hammer would for sure say a goldsmith hammer. Rashi clarifies over here, kapitale solo yim as, that the besamim hammer, you don't want it to become disgusting. So if you use it for all kinds of things that are not spices, it might come disgusting, and you need it to be in a good condition for producing besamim, because you don't want anything to taint the scent. So if I'm okay with using a besamim hammer to crack nuts, then for sure a goldsmith hammer, and then for sure a blacksmith hammer, that's all fine. However, the shita that says you can use a goldsmith hammer, he may not be so quick to say you can also use a besamim hammer. Now, he may not be so quick to say that. Vesakush, Vesakarkar, Vahule, going back to our Mishnah, so we mentioned that you're allowed to use a spindle and a weaver's reed to stab tutim and other various fruits and straw and berries, meaning like using it as like a shish kebab stick, eat one of these things. So Tanur Rabbanon, Paga Shatamna Beteven, Vecharora Shatamna Begachalim. If you have, like I guess a pug is like I think an unripe fig. Right? Te'ena shalo bashla kol tzarka, says Rashi. And you have an unripe fig. V'tomnin b'teven, says Rashi. You buried it in teven, which is typically straw, which is typically mukta. Lis bashel, because you want it to ripen. V'teven mukta havi letit. Right? The teven is mukta letit, meaning that the straw is set aside because it's going to be made into, not clay, like cement. So it's set aside for that. So the straw is mukta, and you're putting in fun fact, if you ever want to ripen a fig, so you put it, bury it in straw, so you might do that. So what if I did this? Now, so I have a non-mukta item in a surrounded mukta item, or v'charora shatamna b'gachalim, or a cake of like dough that was buried in coals, and the coals are mukta. Now, even if the coals cooled off at this point, so can I take my items out of the my non-muksa items out of the muksa items that they're buried in? So imegula miktsasa mutilataltula. If they're partially revealed, so I can grab onto it, I can take it out. Vimla, but if they're fully covered, usur lataltula, I'm not allowed to take it out, right? Because right, sounds like I'm allowed to move the things. I'm not allowed to move the things off directly, but I'm allowed to pull if there's some place I can grab, I can hold onto it. I can pull it out and let the muksa straw or coals fall off on their own. That's fine. Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai Omer. Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai says even more. Tochavin bekush obakarkar. You're allowed to take one of these shish kebab sticks. Meaning there's an added chiddush. He's saying these things that are typically malach to leiser, the spindle or the weaver's reed, and you could stick them in to the unripe fig or the dough, v'hein mina aros me'alehim, and they will be like shaken off on their own. So meaning you don't even need a space where it's revealed. Like you even stick it in there and do it, take it out indirectly. Amar Rav Nachman halacha k'Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai. Rav Nachman says the halacha is in accordance with Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai. So now the Gemara asks, hold on, Rav Nachman said that lemeimra de savar Rav Nachman tiltul min atzad lo shmei tiltul. Does that mean Rav Nachman holds a tiltul min atzad is not called tiltul? Tiltul min atzad. Tiltul is the iser of malacha, right? Sorry, iser of mukta, right? In general, most people grow up thinking mukta is you can't touch it, right? Like don't touch it. It's mukta. But really, what our parents mean is don't touch it because you're likely going to move it if you touch it. But it's called the iser is tiltul. Handling and moving it. So, and tiltul min atzad is indirect tiltul. Now, there's an argument to say that tiltul min atzad is called tiltul, that I can't even indirectly move an object. And is Rav Nachman of, but clearly, what we're saying over here is you're moving the object, you're moving the straw, right? You're moving the coals, you're moving it through sticking in the stick. Even if you're not moving it directly, it's tiltul min atzad. And he's saying it's mutter. He says halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Tadai, that it's mutter to do that. So does that mean Rav Nachman holds tiltul min atzad is not considered tiltul? Hold on. V'homer Rav Nachman, hai pugla mimala lamata shari, mimata lamala osir. If you have a fugla, a radish, right? Sanon talush, Rashi says, a detached radish, a harvested radish, shetmina ba'aretz v'niskala rosho. And it was hidden in the ground, you put it in the ground, I guess, to keep it fresh, and its head is revealed. So you're allowed to take it out if it's lamala lamata. If the wide part, if the top of it is at the top, and it's wide.
So you have to display, well, not display, so nothing's going to fall off.
Right, yes. Because if it's upside down, so there's going to be dirt because it's wider at the bottom, exactly. So it's going to be wider at the bottom, there's going to be dirt, and you're going to move it. So the fact that he allows you, Rav Nachman allows you to remove it, lamata, shari, and lamata, lamala, asir. So clearly he holds it, tiltul min atzad, shmei tiltul, it's a problem. So how can he say over here, we hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedai, and say that it's tiltul min atzad is lav tiltul, over here we say tiltul min atzad, shmei tiltul. Mara says simply, halter by Rav Nachman mehi, Rav Nachman retracted from that. Rav Nachman retracted from this second opinion, and he holds, right, and he holds that that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedai, and he retracted that. Machat shel yad litoba. So we mentioned in the Mishnah that you can use a needle to take like a hand needle to take out a coat, a thorn or a splinter. Shalachli Rava bere de Rabba the Rav Yosef. Rava sent a message. Sorry, Rava, but yeah, Rava ben Rabba. This is not regular Rava. This is Rabba and Rava as well. To Rav Yosef, Yilam Deinu Rabenu. May Rebbe teach us. Machat shanita charara oktsa mahu. If you have a needle and a piece of the needle is taken off, either shanita charara or uktsa. So over here, the charara is not the charara, the cake we mentioned before. Rashi says chur shala, the hole, the eye of the needle, or uktsa is. Take a look at Rashi over here. Uktsa set. He says, pointa, right? We saw forka yesterday, and here we have pointa, right? So you take off either the point of the needle or the eye of the needle. So now it's not its old self. Normally we say a needle is not mukta, right? At least klish makta leiser. But it could be mutzal sharkufa. But what about now that it's missing one of these critical components? Amar lei tanisuha, he said to him, we actually taught this in the Mishnah, basically. Machat shel yad litol ba esakotz. That a hand needle can be used to remove a thorn. So v'chima ichpes lei lekotz bein nukuva lebein sheina nukuva. Why does the thorn care if it's pierced or not pierced? Meaning, if there's an eye of the needle or not. Right? Meaning, right, so he's really only half answering the question, honestly. Because we asked about, let's focus on that half of the question, right? Half of Rava Baraba's question is, if you have a needle that lost the eye of the needle was taken off, it doesn't have the piercing, the hole. It's basically in a nukuva. Now, does that make a difference to whether or not you could take a thorn out, like take out a splinter, if it's missing the eye of the needle? Does that make a difference for it?
I mean, mostly practically speaking, it shouldn't make a difference. Functionally speaking, it doesn't make a difference.
It does not make a difference. Therefore, who cares if the eye is taken off? It still functions as a needle. So really, the truth is, we're still left with the question. So what about if the point of the needle is taken off, right? Then that needle is essentially pointless, right? Thank you. But then the needle is pointless. It's basically useless, and so that's really a fair question. But Rabbi Yossi doesn't address that. He just says this other point. This other point that was not intentional. So now I guess Rava Baraba is going to challenge this. Esve, hold on. Machat shanitel charara o uktsa tahora. We learned in Kalim. Is this Kalim? Yeah, it is in Kalim. We also learned it earlier, actually, in the Masechta, but we learned it in Kalim that if you have a needle that the charara or uktsa were taken off, it is tahora. Now, of course, we know, right, when it comes to Kalim that are tame or that are can become tame, if they lose their function and they're considered a non-kli, they're no longer susceptible to tumah, and also even if they're tummy, they lose their tumah status. So Over here we say, if you take away the charara or the uktza, it becomes Torah. So how could you just told me that, you know, it's, even if you take away the eye of the needle, you took away the charara, it still has a function. But we say over here in Kalim that it's Torah. Yeah. Amar Abaye says, Abaye and Rava, and this are going to respond, the two different pshatim, and this is real Rava, I mean, you know, the classic Rava. So Amar Abaye, Tuma a Shabbos Karamis? You're challenging me from Shabbos based on Tuma? It's no Shabbos, it's apples and oranges. Tuma Kli Maisa Be'inan. For Tuma, in order for something to be susceptible to Tuma, to be Mekabel Tuma, it needs to be what's called a Kli Maisa. Rashi says, Shemaisa Shelo Kayam. Right, that the purpose for which it was made is kayim. Right, I think we get this from maybe the war with Midian and the Kalim that we got from there. That it has to be a kli maisa and it has its main function. Le'inyan Shabbos midi dechazi be'inan. But by Shabbos we don't need I think it was created for and had its status this. Exalts the status of Klima. So we just needed something that's fitting for something that has a use, that's not pointless, and that's a chiluk. So you right, yeah, it's true that if you take off the eye hole, the eye of the needle, so it's still considered functional. However, does it still have its Klima status? No, it does not. So therefore, it's tahora, but it's still not going to be muktzah. And over here, it still has its function of being able to take out a coat. Again, we're not addressing what if it's missing the point part of the needle. We haven't really addressed that, and I don't know if we do in the Gemara. I think the Mefarshim, the post could probably do, but we don't hear. Amar Rava. Rava says, no. Man de kamosiv, shaper kamosiv. No, Abaye, stop trying to defend Rav Yosef. The one who challenged him is actually right, and it's not just because we share the same name. I don't know if this was Rav Bar Abba who refuted him. It's not clear, but either way, that's not Rav's reason. Rav says, I have a different reason. Why it's a good rejection. Midil inyan tuma lav manahu inyan Shabbos nami lav manahu. That right for, regarding if it's not considered a kli regarding tuma, then regarding a Shabbos is also not considered a kli. So it's not a good question. Mesve challenges from this opinion of Rava that it's a good refutation of Rav Yosef from the following brisa. Machat bein nukuva bein she'ena nukuva mutar l'tatala b'Shabbos. If you have a needle, whether it's pierced or not, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. V'lo amru nukuva, and why did within the brash itself, and why does it tell us this chiluk about nukuva and she'en nukuva? Why does that make a difference? El inyan tuma bilvad, right? Because there is a difference when it comes to tuma that of nukuva and she'en nukuva, right? So since there's a chiluk when it comes to tuma, whether it's pierced or not, whether it has the eye needle or not, so we mentioned it, but by Shabbos, Lamaisa, there is no difference. So over here, what we see clearly that there's a difference in halacha with the status of a kli, Shabbos, and tumah, right? And whether nukuva and nukuva, there's a difference when it comes to tumah. When it comes to Shabbos, there's no difference. So how could Rava say no? You see, it's all the same. So it sounds like Rava's stuck, but Baruch Hashem, you know, Abaye is a truth seeker. And he doesn't just want to win in the game, he wants to figure out the MS of the Torah. So he says, Tirgum Abaye, leave it to Rava. Rabbi says, it's true, this is not such a problem to Rava. Right? Really, you can interpret it according to Rava, this price will not be problematic. Begul miaskina. We're talking about with like Lashon of Golem, where it is like blank, like lump of metal, like needle, like lump of metal, that is waiting to be pierced, right? So it's like this like raw needle material waiting to be pierced. So begol measkinan zim de demem lechalayu, and there are times where he might change his mind about it. Umasri le mana, and he'll make it a mana as it is, meaning that you know, they're waiting there, and he's saying, I'm going to use this as a needle. I'm going to pierce it. It's going to become a kli, and therefore doesn't have a kli status yet regarding tumah. But he says, you know what? But actually, I might just end up using it just to take out splinters, and I don't need it to be a pierced needle. Aval hecha denita charara o uktza, but in a case where you take the eye of the needle or the point off, adam zorka leben grutaos, a person just like throws it away among his other like pieces of metal. Rashi says, umashi lemana kamoshihi unatilas kots, right? Meaning he's going to leave it the way it is and he'll take the needle. Grutaos shivri matachos adam zorkin leben grutaos ubatal shem kli mina. So in this case, if you take it off, that's like a piece of junk metal, and people throw it out, and therefore it no longer has a this mukta status. Asuve yinuka. Okay, so this is an interesting concept. Asuve yinuka. I feel like we actually learned about this before. I'm blanking where it is, but asuve yinuka. Rashi says lahachlik seder evarav kishahu nolad. Evarav misparkin mitzarach liyashvan, that some babies were born in a way that their limbs were like dislocated, misparkin. And what you do is you smooth out the baby's body, give the baby like a certain massage, like a newborn baby a certain massage, and puts things back in order. I don't know how common this is nowadays, but this is something that I believe we did see earlier in the sector and talking about refuos, I think. So Rav Nachman, give us a reference somewhere. Okay, Rav Nachman asir, Rav Sheshes shari. Rav Nachman forbade doing this on Shabbos, and Rav Sheshes said his mutter. Rashi says Rav Nachman asered it because it's didami lemtaken. It's like tikkun, like some sort of makom potish, even on a human being. We've mentioned that can't apply to a human being. Now, presumably, this is not a case where there's going to be any severe. You know, for now the kid's going to be a hunchback for the rest of his life because you didn't do this on Shabbos, so that wouldn't be what we're talking about. We're talking about something that can wait, and you shouldn't do it now. Rosh Hashanah says, nevertheless, it's mutter. So, Amar of Nachman, mina amin Allah, where did I get that from? That you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, you're not allowed to give this asuve yinuka to straighten out this the baby. It's not because we learned in the Mishnah, ein osin apik tozin b'Shabbos, that you're not allowed to do apik tozin on Shabbos. Rashi says, b'tozin lahaki, to vomit, someone to like make themselves vomit. Shosem mashkim umaki, someone drinks a certain type of thing. I think it's called an emetic or something. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that properly, but it's a certain thing that you drink. And it makes you throw up. Why would you do that? The lola refuah. It's not for refuah. Ela laharik esmeav sheyuchol lachos lechol velishtos sayom harbei. Not exactly.
Well, the opposite.
Yeah. This is the opposite of bulimia, right? This is where he
made.
What? It sounds like vaguely familiar. Yeah, I can't imagine such a concept of like hedonism to force yourself to vomit. Like,
more.
Who? Yeah, I know. To force yourself to vomit to make room so you can eat and drink more. Like, who? I don't want to eat and drink after I vomit. I don't know. Maybe because I'm vomiting with the wrong things.
The person is eating disorder, can't stop eating. So it's like the benefit of that without the disorder, that without the weight.
Right. So you can remember Barak Chavis, right? Va'afagav de lo gozer ba mishum shchika samanim de ha lav lerfui. Because so we learned over there in Barak Chavis, I guess later on, that even though there's no gzera because of shchika samanim, right? You know, shchika samanim, there is a gzera of refua, but this is not refua. Asur mishum de mitakin gavra. This is called tikkun, right? This is called tikkun agavra. It's not refua. So it's not also because of that. It's also because it's some sort of tikkun, of tikkun gavra, right? To fix yourself up, to empty yourself out.
Okay.
You're not ill.
Isn't the person not doing it? No, we're not saying that this ever being done is the person overeating and feels sick.
Well, we're not saying, so
we're talking about that,
so right.
We're doing it so for forgiveness purposes, you can eat again.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So plug it back in. So over here we see tikkun gavra is a problem. Therefore, she says, okay, also, you know, like the this massage for the newborns, also is a tikkun gavra and it's usher. So Rav Sheish says, "Hasam lav orche, hacha orche." Rav Sheish says, "That's not orche." The harihu kamisha me'achlenu mashkehu. He says, "This is. I don't know exactly what he means by orche. Honestly, if you'd ask me, I would say it's not normal. But I think it's like not the normal process. Meaning, it's normal and it's the proper derech.
This is like self-induced, as opposed to being something that just happens on its own."
The baby thing happens on its own. It doesn't happen on its own, but it's something that kind of like requires your attention and needs to be taken care of. Yeah,
but it's not induced. It's not like you create the condition. If it happens, it happens, and then now we remedy it by straightening the limbs. Whereas induced vomiting is artificial. It didn't just happen on its own.
Mm-hmm.
It's a situation that we are bringing on.
Yeah. Right, it could be that's what he's saying.
I mean, potato. It's apples and oranges. When I think about it too closely, too much. There's no issue. No, straightening the limbs means that the child, there's something wrong that needs to be corrected. There's nothing wrong that the person is taking a medic for.
Right.
There's no condition that this can be resolved, fixed.
Right. So what? So but what, I mean, so if, why does that make it any less of a tikkun gavra?
I'm just saying, comparing the two.
Right. Well, we want to say it's a tikkun gavra, right? That's the problem over here. This is tikkun gavra. Says Rav Nachman. This is tikkun gavra. This is tikkun gavra. So Rav Seishas presumably is coming to say no. This maybe is tikkun gavra, but that's not the baby thing. Is not tikkun gavra. That's what seemingly you come to. Vahari hu kamisha ma'achilenu mashkehu, and this is like somebody who ate it and drank it. Okay. I'm not fully sure. I'll have to look into that. What his exact response is, like what he means by that differentiation, this distinction. Okay, anyway, Amar of Sheishas, Mina Amin Allah. So what's my source? Meaning I'm interpreting it according to you, I'm interpreting your source differently. But how do I interpret my source? Meaning what is my source? So Mina Amin Allah Ditnan, because we said Machat Shal Yad Lito Ba Esakotz, as we learned in our Mishnah, that you're allowed to take out a kotz. Right, so this is Rashi says Alma Tikune Gavra Bimidi Delav Lerafua Delekamishum Shlika Saman and Shari, that we see that a tikkun of a gavra with something that's not rafua is not, and therefore it's not considered part of rafua is permitted. So this is a tikkun gavra, and it's not part of rafua. So it's fine. Meaning he seems to say that tikkun gavra is permitted. So I guess he would consider. The other thing, the Afikati Tozin, maybe not even Tikkun Gavra at all, and he says Tikkun Gavra in general is okay, as long as it's not Rafua. Rafua is a problem. But Tikkun Gavra is fine, as we see over here, because you're allowed to take a splinter out. We wouldn't call it Rafua. It's not healing. There's something in there, you're taking it out. So it's a Tikkun Gavra, and it's Mutter. Therefore, we learned that also what you're doing to the baby is Tikkun Gavra, and there's maybe some extraneous problem with the vomiting situation. Rav Nachman, so how would Rav Nachman interpret that? Yeah, how do you deal with that? Isn't that tikkun gavra, the splinter thing? So Rav Nachman, hasam pakid hacha lo pakid. Here it's pakid. Rashi says pakid is hakotz hazeh eino mechuber bo. The thorn isn't like connected and one with the body. Ella mufkad v'nasun sham. It's like deposited and placed there. V'hotzah zo eino tikkun. He said, Rav Nachman says, you call taking out a thorn, a tikkun? That's not a tikkun. There's something in there you just need to remove. It's not fixing anything, you're just taking something out. That's not called a tikkun. Therefore he says, yes, it's true. Our Mishnah says you're allowed to take out a splinter in Shabbos. That's not a problem. Actively manipulate a child's body and push things back into shape. And that, so that is called a tikkun. Rav Nachman says that would be usher. Right, okay, so I hear that. Right, that's what he's saying. Yeah, so Rashi is saying that if this is something that's part of the derech, meaning it's a normal thing. A baby comes out, so you have to feed it, you have to drink. You don't call eat feeding a baby. Oh, that's tikkun gafur. You can't do it. Of course not. It's part of a normal derech, and part of a normal part of childbirth is that sometimes the baby's body things are dislocated, and you just simply manipulate them back into place, and that's fine, and that's not considered a fool, and it's not considered tikkun gafur, and it's fine. However, to do something like this. But then, how does he explain the splinter thing? Is that tikkun gavra, or maybe he? I have to think of how that follows through.